So I picture Cody taking a snap next fall and, blue 21, red. What was that play, guys, I was calling the huddle? I forget what that was. First time I've been to your campus, I've met countless students from this student body over the years at Kanakuk, and I can't remember their names or your names, but I know a lot of y'all I met up there last year, but I was writing down last night just all the different interesting people from this school, and you got a like super diverse student body from high schools all over the city and stuff, and I was kind of writing down last night all the students I met from here and just kind of the qualities and characteristics. I thought this may be one of the most interesting student bodies really in Houston, and I wrote down, I'd met apple pie bakers, and I'd met movers, and hear from shakers, and blondes, and brunettes, and dive bottle breakers. I'd met California dreamers, and horror show screamers. I met doodlers, and dunkers, and straight A's, and flunkers. I met entertaining singers, and planners, and wingers. I met finchers, and rollers, and gutter ball bowlers. I've met goers, and starters, and slow pokes, and darters, and handkerchief users, and tissue abusers. I met interstate bikers, and wilderness hikers, and joggers, and anglers, and you wear Levi's, and Wranglers sometimes. And I met kissers, and tellers, and friends of the fellers, and lovers, and fighters, and fingernail biters, and dude, I met muscle men bowed up and hunters that load up and newspaper readers and drivers and speeders. And I met out of sight honeys and shy ones and funnies and people with answers and crazy break dancers and quivering chunkers and actually a couple of basketball slam dunkers and readers and thinkers and not a drop drinkers and soda straw slurpers and bad mannered burpers. I met teasers and criers and high rolling flyers and uncles and sisters and passive resistors and virtuous foxes and real Goldilockses and weirdos and crazies and slow pokes and lazies and xylophone pickers and popsicle lickers and yawners and nappers and a couple of one handy cappers and zipper your lippers and tightwads and tippers. And anyway, there's like 20 more, I can't remember. But anyway, it's good to be among such an interesting group of people. So here we are. So I got to tell you, I was thrilled when I just found out last night you guys were the Mustangs. So now I know that this, you're not the SMU Mustangs, but anyway, that's where I played football up at that. So I felt like, well, hey, we've got at least that in common. We have a horse we have in common. So I grew up in College Station. It was a really small town in those days, and I always played in front of very small crowds. And then the next thing I know, I'm up playing against Ohio State and Auburn and Texas. And for me, being a little bitty small town kid and going to a place like SMU and playing all these gigantic teams, I just got killed every Saturday. I mean, for me, college football was murder. That's all it was. I just got murdered. Anyway, do any of you guys play football ever in your life? Raise your hand if you play football. Raise your hand. Well, football players aren't very smart. But anyway, I don't know what happens to us guys. But anyway, I played that game forever. And I coached at Texas A&M and stuff. And there's a whoop in the crowd. I like that. Anyway, but while I was at SMU, even though football Saturdays were murder for me, something cool happened. My senior year, the last class of my senior year, I met this girl who cheered for our team. Her name was Debbie Jo. Any cheerleaders in here? Raise your hand. The stuff cheerleaders can do on the field. I mean, Debbie Jo would lead us into the Cotton Bowl or wherever we'd play ball, and she would be doing those backhand springs and backflips and all this junk. And I'm like, how do you do that on AstroTurf? I have no idea. But anyway, so I met Debbie Jo, and that summer she came to Kanakuk to teach cheerleading and dance and stuff like that. And so I just, like in the middle of summer, I just go, man, I've got to ask that girl for a date. I mean, Drew Jackson, it's like seeing, they're so awesome. You're just like, oh my gosh, she'll say no. I know she'll say no. Anyway, so I asked her for a date, and she said yes, which just shocked me. Anyway, and so we went sailing, which is a really nice way to start a relationship. Anyway, and so anyway, long story short, so I'm dating this girl for a year, and then one time, I wasn't a cheerleader, obviously. I played football, and I said, show me what cheerleaders do, and she jumped up in my arms. Oh, that was nice. And I'm like, dude, if I could just hold this girl for the next 60 years of my life, I'll be the happiest guy in the world. So I get a little diamond ring. My grandmama gives me this diamond ring. And so I'm so nervous, Drew, to say, will you marry me? I'm so nervous. So I just take the diamond ring, and guys, when the day comes, it's all about the diamond. They don't care about you anyway. It's fine. Anyway, and so I take the diamond ring and put it in a little Cracker Jacks box. No idea why. So I take Debbie Jo up on this beautiful cliff, like a 300-foot cliff overlooking Table Rock Lake up in the Ozarks, where our camps are. And so the sun is shimmering on the water. She can't say no. And so I get too nervous. And so I just go, would you like some Cracker Jacks? That's all I can think of. And so she starts eating them things. Well, they're stale because I'd opened the box and sealed it with rubber cement. Well, they smell like glue. And I don't know if you're a glue sniffer, but anyway, it ain't cool. Anyway, and so she takes a bite. and they're awful. And so she just throws them over the cliff. And me being a football player with hands, I just dove out and snagged the box. And I said, hey, before you do that, why don't you look for the surprise? So she dumps it out. Surprise lands in her hand. She opens it up, and there's the sweet ring. Anyway, so she puts it on, and fellas, you want to make sure it fits her when you give her a diamond ring, okay? And get a little tip. Anyway, and so I said, would you like to marry that? And she goes, yes. And I go, well, I go with it. She goes, well, you'll do. So anyway, so she put that diamond ring on 40 years ago, and it's still on. And so I'm the luckiest guy alive. Okay, you guys. I am such a nut. Something's wrong with me. So I'm coming back from Cairo a couple of weeks ago, and I'd been speaking to a couple of festivals over there in Cairo, Egypt, and I'm coming back, and so I'm on this, you know, the sweet airplane coming back, and they're just, you know, I mean, the way they treat you on some of these flights is just like, you know, incredible. And so I've got this movie screen, and I can watch any movie. You know, there's just bazillions of movies. Well, being a good never grew up person, I choose Spider-Man and Batman. So on the way in the Avengers. So I'm watching shows that you would probably think adults don't watch anyway. I do. And so I'm watching Spider-Man, Batman, and the Avengers. Isn't that crazy? What a trip back from Egypt. Anyway, and I'm thinking, okay, here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking, why in the heck are all of the like superheroes hiding behind masks and dressed up in Hollywood? I mean, and I'm like, where are the heroes? Where are like the real heroes? And you know what I started thinking about this morning? I started thinking about Kennecott kids that I know at this school who are heroes. In fact, I'm not going to embarrass them, but I met some of them this morning. And I think, in my opinion, and I work with adults and men and women and conferences all over the world and stuff like this, but I think the heroes of the society, especially in America, are high school kids who are literally following Christ. I think it's the most difficult, heroic thing that goes on in the whole world today. Because the world you guys live in, because all I do is work with high school kids. My job is my life, unless I'm doing these, you know, conferences or whatever. And I meet kids like you. Y'all, I'm at Kennecott last year. You talk about a hero. This kid's named Jackson. He comes up to me after I do a talk on creation, intelligent design, rounding in the stars. And he comes up, he's like 12 years old. And Jackson, he might weigh 95 pounds. And Jackson comes up to me, and he said, Mr. White, can I tell you how I led my atheist friend, Will, to Christ? And I said, yeah. He goes to a public school, and he says, well, Will weighs 200 pounds, Mr. White. He's twice as big as I am. And I'm like, I can picture this thing, this big atheist kid and Jackson. And I said, what'd you do? He said, well, every day I would go to my computer, and I would pull off these notes on proof for God that you teach us. And so he puts one page of proof for God notes in Will's locker. Well, after about 3 weeks, Will gets ticked. And so Jackson shows up at his locker with these proof for God notes. And Will's waiting for him, and he hits him right between the, right in the temple, and just flattens him in the hallway. And I said, dang, Jackson, that must have hurt. He goes, yeah, Mr. White, he's twice as big as I am. And I said, what'd you do? He said, I went back to my computer that night, and I got some more notes. And he goes back to the locker the next day, and he puts some more notes in the locker. Will's waiting for him, and hits him right in the mouth and just shatters his lip, and he splatters in the hallway. And I said, Jackson, what'd you do? He said, I went back to my computer, and I got some more notes. The third day, this is so cool. The third day, he goes back to Will's locker, and he puts more notes in his locker, and Will's waiting for him. And he said, dude, if your Jesus can mean that much to you, that you're willing to sacrifice your face so that I can get to know your Jesus, I want to know the same Jesus you know. And he leads the kid to Christ in front of his locker. And I said, hey, Jackson, does he go to church? He said, yep, every Wednesday night and Sunday morning. I said, how do you know? He said, because he goes with me. Now, dude, that ain't a Batman. That ain't Spider-Man. And it ain't fake. That's a hero. Some of these stories I can hardly tell. There was this girl named Lori Ann. Me and David Joe were doing Young Life clubs, and we had these rowdy, crazy Young Life clubs, and where we going? And we got this one Young Life club in Branson, it's insane. Anyway, and we're throwing songs. But there's this one girl who walks in one night with a patch over her eye. and a small little girl, one precious little blue-eyed. I asked some of the kids, I go, who's the girl with the patch over her eye? I said, it's Lorianne Hagerman. I said, why's she got a patch on her eye? And they said, because she's got cancer and they had to take her eye. And so I start getting to know Lorianne and have an opportunity to lead that little girl to Christ. And y'all, she becomes the most shining light in her high school you've ever met in your life. Cancer's just eating up her face. She got tumors in her neck and her mouth and junk. And she comes down to MD Anderson and they're giving her all this chemotherapy stuff and her little face is just getting eaten by cancer. And every time you'd go into Lori's room, you'd think you were going in there so that you could give her a little, you know, a little bit of love and a little bit of encouragement. And you'd walk away and all she would do was she would just care for you. And she would just build into your life and she would just share the love of Christ with you while she's dying of face cancer. And so about 7 days before she dies, she's down here at MD Anderson with these great cancer research guys. And she's just, everybody she meets, she just fall in love with Lorianne. And these guys had fallen in love with her. And they come into her room, all of them, four or five of them. And they sit her on her bed, you know, and they said, Lorianne, we need to tell you that all your chemo and stuff, it's just not working. We don't have a drug that can, and basically they're just saying, Lorianne, we just need you to know within a week or so you're going to be dying. And that girl looks at those doctors with this one little pretty blue eye. And she said, I'm not going to die when your drugs run out. She said, I'm going to die when my Jesus takes me home. So she comes back to Branson, and there's some big superstar rock star playing in Springfield, a city north of us. So I go to the concert, and I find my way backstage, and I never met the guy. And I walk into his room, and I said, tomorrow morning, I'm going to pick you up, and you're going with me to Branson, and you're going to sing to this girl who's going to die in a week. So I pick this guy up, and he's on the Saturday night show, and she happens to be watching from the hospital bed. And so we go in there on Sunday morning, and he sings to her, and he kisses her. The next morning, a priest comes in to visit her, and he says, Lorianne, I hear you had a rock star come to your room yesterday. And she looks at that priest with that one little blue eye, and she said, what's a rock star when you're going to meet Jesus in a week? The president of my student body in College Station, we were a small town, this Kanaka kid named David. David was a big, tall, handsome, dark-haired kid. Fabulous kid, kind of a quiet guy, but everybody admired him, you know. And so he's president of our student body. So it's time for the senior prom. And everybody's like, what homecoming queen's David going to invite? What beautiful girl will David take to the prom? Well, there's a girl living across the street from me named Kathy Sperry. Kathy had a disease when she was a little girl and her face was paralyzed. I get so emotional about these kids. And y'all, when Kathy would walk down the hallway, she would drool because her face was so paralyzed that she couldn't close her mouth and she couldn't raise her neck because everything was paralyzed. And no one in my high school will ever forget David, the big, handsome president of the student body, walking over across the street and asking Kathy Sperry to be his date for the prom. I don't know what anybody wore to the prom. I don't know who came to the prom. But no one will ever forget the beautiful girl in the beautiful blue eyes. Yeah, her face was paralyzed, and yeah, she drooled when she danced. But the president of the student body thought enough of that girl to be his prom date. You know, these heroes that I meet, gang, I meet them in schools like this all over the country. You've got a card in your... They're God first, they're other second, they're I'm third. It's the motto of our camps. It's becoming the motto of heroes in high schools all over this country who decide to take the whole world and take a back seat and to say, there's one thing in my life, and that's that God would be first in me. There's one thing in my life that other people would be second. And there's one thing in my life that God would reign in my body. And I'd be blessed to be I'm third. Under his life, we got one hero at Kanakuk. There's only one guy. His name's Johnny Ferrier. Johnny was a kid. He was like 9 years old. And an older gentleman came out, and he gave Johnny this card, and he talked about what it meant to put God first, the other person second, yourself third. And as a 9-year-old, Johnny got it. And he started carrying this card everywhere he went. He ends up playing college football for Colorado State. He becomes a running back, great athlete. He goes to the Air Force after college, takes a jet airplane called the F-86 Sabre Jet, fights in a war. When Johnny comes back from the war, he and three other pilots become the Minutemen, the first jet precision team that our country ever put out there. Now we're called the Thunderbirds, but this was years ago. So Johnny's in the Minutemen. Johnny's got the I'm Third Corps in his back pocket. Johnny and his team, if you've seen the Thunderbirds, it's phenomenal watching these jets flying over these crowds just under the speed of sound. And it's like their wingtips are almost touching. And then right in the middle of the show, with 100,000 people on this certain day in the National Air Races in Columbus, Ohio, where flight was invented, these four planes go straight up in the air, just touching almost in the air. And they've got blue smoke coming out of the back of their planes. And then straight up in the air at 7,000 feet, Johnny's plane takes a right turn. And his buddy Major Win Coomer takes a left turn. And the two other pilots go straight up into the sky, making this giant blue cross in the sky called the fleur-de-lis. Then as the Denver Post, the newspaper where Johnny's was from, wrote in the newspaper the next day, it said, all of a sudden, the morning of beauty turned into a morning of horror because one of the planes was out of control, and it was Johnny. The rudder had locked in his turn. And Johnny's plane is headed for a little town outside of Dayton, Ohio, called Fairborn. And his plane is heading into a house. And there's a single mom in there with a little boy. And she said in the interview after this happened, she said, I was looking out my picture window. And she said, the plane was coming straight into my house. And then she said, somehow he pulled it up and over my house, and she put it there. And she pointed to a gaping hole, a smoky gaping hole in the backyard garden. The only place in the town that Johnny could have put the plane without killing anybody, except, of course, himself. The backstory is when Johnny was up at 7,000 feet, when the plane started to roll, his commander commanded him to bail out four times. He kept saying, Johnny, bail out. All Johnny had to do was push a button. And the canopy would jettison, and the parachute would jettison, and he would float down to safety, back with his wife and his kids, who I know. But Johnny kept hitting the smoke button, and he kept saying to his commander, look, I'm not going to bail out. I am not going to let my plane fly into those houses and kill those people out there. And so Johnny lived by this phenomenal motto, and he died by it: God first, other second, and I'm third. You know why God's first? This kid comes up to me a couple summers ago from Tampa. I'll never forget him. His name's Connor. Big, strong, straightforward kid, football player. And he goes, I don't believe in God. And I said, okay, what else you want to talk about? And he said, no, I don't believe in God. And I said, that's fine. He said, why do you believe in God? And so I just took my watch off. And I said, so Connor, where'd this thing come from? I mean, you know. He goes, dude, somebody made it. I said, how you know? He said, well, obviously somebody made it. I said, did you see him make it? He goes, no. I said, did you talk to somebody who made it? He goes, no. I said, how you know somebody made it? And he said, dude, it says made in China. I said, you from China? How do you know? He said, I don't know. And he said, well, it has order. It has intelligence. I said, so you know somebody made it, even though you didn't see somebody make it. He goes, yeah. So I did that. I pull a cell. I studied biology in college. And I said, you know, Connor, you know what's on my fingertip? He goes, a cell. And I said, that's right. I said, Connor, you know how much information is in that watch? He goes, how much? I said, about 10 volumes. There's about 10 volumes of information, intelligence, in that watch. And I said, do you know how much intelligence is in that cell? He said, no. I said, scientifically, 10 million volumes. 10 million volumes of brilliance in every cell in your body. I said, where'd that come from? He said, from another cell. I said, where'd that come from? He said, from another cell. I said, where'd the original come from? That night, we're talking about creation. He comes up. He said, so what's the point? And I said, the point is God wants to be your dad. And Connor gives his heart to Christ because God is first in everything. And the other person second. Unbelievable. The other day I'm talking to this kid from Fayetteville. This kid got this awesome pickup truck. Well, his mom gets sick. She's got to go to the hospital, and they got no money. And he calls me up. He goes, dude, sell my truck. I said, "Do you want to sell your truck so your mom can get some hospital care?" He said, "Heck yeah, sell my truck." Every second of every day, you got a chance to become great. Because the man who wrote the book, the man who created it all, you know, the one we've been singing about, y'all, for the last, and y'all did a great job, by the way. He says, if you want to be great, you want to be great, become servant of all. If you want to really be great, become servant of all. I go to Providence. Where'd you play ball, Sienna? Richmond. And it's not a Christian school at all. And we build this cross. We go to Army and Navy and A&M and Purdue and USC and all these schools and thousands of kids. But people at Richmond, they don't do anything Christian. But that blonde-headed girl who's like the most third person you ever met, who brings the basketball down the court for Richmond, she brings 700 students into this outdoor place. And I introduce her, and the place erupts. Not because she's gorgeous, not because she's smart, not because she's a great basketball player, because people who serve, people who put God first, others second, and I'm third, you're just contagious. We go to the University of Texas, and we're out there on that lawn underneath that giant tower, and her husband, Drew, brings 2,000 students, probably the biggest gathering in the name of Christ that's ever happened at the University of Texas, because one guy decided years ago to become great by giving himself to put God first, others second, and I'm third. And then the whole I'm third thing. You know why you put that motto in your billfold? You know why you put it on your mirror before you dress? We're at OU doing one of the crusades. And this girl writes me afterwards. And she says, before tonight, she goes, my God has been my body. And she'd been suffering from anorexia and from bulimia. When your body becomes your God or anything else becomes your God, it just wrecks everything in your life. But she said, tonight, when I became God first, other second, and I'm third, and she gave her heart to Christ. She said, I saw myself in the image of Christ. Ladies, for the first time in her life, she's free. We're at the University of Alabama, and hundreds of kids come to this thing, and hundreds of kids come up to the cross, and they give their hearts to become God first, other second, and I'm third. And this one big athlete comes up there, I'll never forget him, big dark-haired kid, and fabulous, handsome athlete, and he's crying his eyes out. And he goes, dude, he goes, my God is sex. He said, my God is pornography. He said, I do sex on my computer every single night. He said, I'm a leader on this campus, but they don't know that way down in my life, it's me first, and it's God last, and I'm wrecking my life with sex and porn. But that night, that kid took it. He took that I'm third principle, God first, other second, I'm third. And I called him 2 years later, said, Ben, are you still pure? Are you still clean? He said, I've never gone back to porn again. And I'll just tell you guys, if there's one inside rot, my brother used to work organized crime and he used to work drugs. He was a Missouri State policeman. But he'd work undercover heroin. He'd work undercover cocaine. And the worst drug in the whole scheme of drugs, it ain't heroin, it ain't cocaine, it's pornography. Because like cocaine, it eats you up from the inside out. It eats you up. It makes you instantly addicted to a drug that will steal your marriage, dude. It will steal your marriage. It will steal your children. It'll steal your heart. It'll steal your soul. But when a guy becomes I'm third, he says to Jesus, Psalms 101:3, I will put nothing unclean before my eyes. It's a promise. He's got Psalms 101:3 on his computer. He's got Psalms 101:3 on his television set. He's got Psalms 101:3 on his iPhone and his iPad. Because I'm third means God is first. And even though I don't know my wife, you know, you guys, there's a name written on your heart, man. I raised two boys, Brady and Cooper. And there's a name written on your heart you don't even know yet. You've got a Debbie Jo waiting for you. And one day that girl, man, is going to walk down the aisle. And I'm going to tell you something, man, it's the most beautiful sight you'll ever see in your life. And you're going to stand there and you're going to be so excited and so just freaking out. It's just so awesome to watch your bride walk down that aisle and to take her little hands in your hands and to give her the next 60 years of your life. And by the grace of God, you'll go back to this chapel on this day. And you'll say to her, you know, I went to a chapel one day back in my high school days. And everything changed for me because God became first. And you, little princess, you became second. And I sacrificed my desire for sex. I sacrificed my desire for porn because you were coming. And since that day, I've never seen any other girl, unclothing or unclothed, because God wanted that reserved for you, little princess. Y'all, I'm third changes everything. I'm going to leave you this. I went to Texas A&M a couple of weeks ago, speaking to the football team. There were 17 guys. They were on the field starting. But in terms of God, they were sitting on the bench. Oh, they're great players. Oh, they're winning the, you know, whatever, you know, bowl they're going to play in. They beat Alabama. Whatever. But they were sitting on the bench. And I walked in there and I held up one chain link. And I got this from Green Bay when I was speaking to the Packers. I'm going to Green Bay. And I said, God, what do these guys need? I'm almost asleep. He says, take a chain link. And I took a chain link in there. And I said, Green Bay, I said, you guys won the Super Bowl. I said, but you know what God wants? I said, he wants one guy. He wants one guy who would say, Jesus, if you died for me, if you stretched out your arms and you let them beat you till the skin came off your face, and you did that for me, I will live for you. Here's my life. And Reggie White, this 348-pound superstar, he gets up off his seat in the fourth row, and he walks up here, and he takes this chain link out of my hands, and he says, I want to be a bondservant of Jesus. And I shook his hand. I said, Reggie, how's your chains? And he said, good and tight, baby, good and tight. Because you know what, gang, whether you're a girl or a guy, or you're a teacher, or you're an administrator, coach, there's only one room for one chain link on your heart. You'll either be chained to some crummy habit, some crummy alcoholic habit, some crummy drug habit, some crummy pornographic habit, some crummy memory of the past where you failed, and Jesus has taken that failure from you, and he's given you his righteousness. He's restored your virginity. He's made you pure again. And in that purity, that when you give your little heart to him, he gives you we're Texas Tech. And there's 2,500 students, and 1,800 students come out on the floor and they start kneeling at the foot of that cross. And this one little girl, she comes up to me and she's crying. And I said, what's your name? She said, Maggie. I said, Maggie. That's my granddaughter's name. I already love you. I said, why are you crying? She said, when I was 17, they filmed me. She said, I was pornography. And she starts slashing herself, her wrists. Then she starts giving her sex away to these guys. And I just take this little love letter in my back pocket, you guys, and I turn to 2 Corinthians 5:21, and there it is right there. I said, Maggie, it says right there that God made Jesus, who knew no sin, become porn. He became cutting. He became rape. He became hatred. Whatever your little heart has been chained to, he became that. I said, little Maggie, so that you could become the righteousness of Christ in him. And ladies, this white veil of purity fell out of heaven. No one saw it. Maggie did. I did. And that little girl, as she became a bondservant of Jesus Christ, as she became God first, other second, I'm third, she walked out of that gym that night at Tech, the most beautiful bride of the most beautiful man, Jesus Christ, you've ever seen in your life. So I go to A&M 2 weeks ago. And 17 guys, oh, there were others who already walked with Christ, but 17 guys who were sitting on the bench as far as being any kind of, and I'm not going to mention any names, but they're guys you're watching play. They're guys who are like, anyway, I don't want to talk in names because it's confidential, but guys got up, and they walked up there in front of their team, and they said, I will be known for the rest of my playing days in my life, a bondservant of Jesus, God's first, others a second, and I'm third. There's a Reggie White in here. There's 17 guys in here. There's a little Maggie in here. There's a little Lorianne in here. There's a Drew Jackson in here. They would say, you know what? If he died for me, I'm going to live for him. Here's my life. And so as the band does worship here just for a song, I'm going to invite that person up here. Just come by yourself. Just pray. And the athletes wear these things on their cleats. They tie them to their shoelaces. Some of the guys in the league will wear them around their neck. And I go, why do you wear your chain link around your neck? And these players in the league will tell me, because now he lives in my heart. And I want my chain link right by my heart. Say, I'm a bondservant of Christ. God's first now. Others are second, and I'm third.